From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi became the only woman to ever be House Speaker and hopes after this year's midterm elections to retake that position. The House Minority Leader, who represents California's very liberal-leaning 12th District, is now facing another hurdle on her way to retaking the House, a grassroots challenger in the June primary. My guest, Shahid Buttar, has been a longtime critic of Pelosi, who he has accused of enabling continued violations of privacy and civil rights, particularly during the past few years. As Democrats attempt to take on Republicans in the November elections, how will they fare against progressives running to their left earlier in the year? Well, Shahid Buttar joins me. He is the congressional candidate for California's 12th District, currently on leave as director of grassroots advocacy at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Before that, he served as executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and he's been a guest on our program before, usually as a guest expert, today as a candidate. Welcome to the program, Shahid.
Thanks so much for having me, Sonali. It's always great to be with you.
Well, I have to confess, I was very surprised to see that you would be running for election. You are a longtime activist, somebody who is agitated from the outside. What led you to make this decision to jump into the electoral fray?
At the end of the day, I've watched my city's congressional representative undermine the interests of constitutional rights and immigrants too many times. It really just became impossible to watch from the sidelines. And I felt compelled to throw my hat in the ring. I at least want to make sure that if my city is going to be represented by a pillar of the corporate establishment, that it doesn't happen without a fight.
So the outline for us, the problems with Nancy Pelosi's position on, in particular, issues that you've been fighting for many years, which is the right to privacy, the fight against surveillance of ordinary Americans, the NSA's infractions into ordinary people's lives. What is Nancy Pelosi's position on these issues?
So, you know, she talks big game about resistance to the Trump administration. But unfortunately, it seems that for the incumbent, resistance is just a hashtag to be claimed when it's convenient and abandoned also whenever it's convenient. It was just a month ago that in her capacity as the House Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi helped kill an opportunity to finally impose a judicial warrant requirement so that FBI, NSA, and DEA searches of Americans would have to be approved by a judge first. By killing that reform, she basically handed to the Trump administration on a silver platter, not just extended surveillance powers, but also expanded surveillance powers. And watching that discrete vote and her role in it, that was the particular event that pushed me into running. It was just so infuriating, I couldn't stand by.
So tell us what the political landscape looks like for June. Nancy Pelosi has held her position for decades, and she, you know, still, I think, touts this image of being this renegade, you know, rebellious leader who the liberal constituency that she represents should be proud of. Right. Does she face any other challenge besides you among the Democrats?
She does, but just to answer your first question, Nancy Pelosi represents the most liberal and progressive district in the United States. And she has a reputation of being the House's most liberal member, but the shoe does not fit. In fact, the liberal shoe at all does not fit. You can't vote for mass surveillance or turn the other way on CIA torture, both of which she's done, and still claim to be a liberal. It is profoundly incongruous that someone with so decidedly corporate a position is representing so liberal and progressive a city. And that's exactly why I'm running. There are other challengers who have filed campaigns to seek this seat. One of them, I think, is a five-time contender representing the Green Party. Another one is 24 years old, and the last has no experience on any of the issues that we're raising. So I'm quite confident that we'll have the opportunity to square off against Representative Pelosi through November.
Now, is it just her position on civil rights, or is it other issues as well? You mentioned CIA torture. Let's talk about that. What exactly is her position on it? What is your critique of what she has, positions she has taken? When we hear CIA torture, we think of the Republican Party and the Bush administration first and foremost, George W. Bush, although, of course, not enough done was done to hold it was not enough was done on accountability under Obama.
Yeah, unfortunately, CIA torture and impunity for it and ongoing violations of our international human rights treaties are a bipartisan commitment. Both Republicans and Democrats have shielded human rights abusers from accountability. In doing that, they have basically cost the world the victory that the United States fought a world war to establish so many years ago. And Nancy Pelosi, as the House Minority Leader and at different points the Speaker of the House, was fully read into all of the covert programs that the national security agencies pursue, and she did nothing about it. So it's not her position, it's her lack of a position, and it's her lack of action. A consistent theme of my concerns about the incumbent is precisely that the rhetoric does not match the reality. It was just a few weeks ago, in fact, probably last week or maybe the week before, that she performed a media stunt basically talking for 8 hours about the rights of immigrant students while engineering a backroom deal to throw us under the bus. And the
You're talking
fact of the
about the
matter.
sort of filibuster style speech that she gave on the floor of the House, holding up votes on the spending bill while she read testimonies of dreamers who were DACA registrants. And you're saying that she was conducting a backroom deal at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, at the same time that she was talking on the House floor, she was one of the architects of the budget deal that ended up passing the House without any protections for Dreamers. So you might say that she's talking out of one side of her mouth while doing very different
Didn't she
things
vote
in
against it?
action. She voted against it in her individual capacity, but she's the House Minority Leader, meaning that in her capacity as the head of the party, she didn't champion Dreamers' interests using her office. That's exactly my point, is the It's easy as a politician to say one thing and do another. And that's unfortunately precisely what the incumbent has done for decades.
It's interesting that even the New York Times saw through the hypocrisy of her position on the spending bill, pointing out that Democrats did not stick together. 73 of them voted for the spending bill, thus ensuring its passage. Of course, huge chunks of Republicans didn't vote for it. So, had Pelosi's fellow Democrats not voted for it, that spending bill wouldn't have passed. Before the bill passed, she said, one lawmaker said that she said, "We're better when we stick together." After it passed, Nancy Pelosi said in an interview, "We had a great bill. We got everything. Republicans gave away the store." But of course, they didn't give anything to Dreamers, and they gave lots to the military.
Right. There's never been a military funding request that Nancy Pelosi hasn't liked. And unfortunately, it's not just NSA, it's not just immigrants. She's very consistently undermined the rights of her constituents.
Now, she, as House Minority Leader, so she's basically the second after Paul Ryan in how much power she may be wielding politically. What capacity does she have? When we've seen how Republicans operate when they're the minority party, they are pretty disciplined. Does Nancy Pelosi, you think, have the leverage that we want her to have in holding firm all of her fellow Democrats to, unite around certain issues to present this progressive vision that she's, claiming her reputation gives her?
I am ultimately less interested in the incumbent's failures to use her leverage. It's precisely why we're mounting an alternative. She certainly has a great deal of leverage over Democrats. She's a renowned vote whipper. It's just that when push comes to shove on issues of crucial concern to Americans, like whether or not we have an opportunity to have a private conversation or whether democracy will survive this administration, she doesn't show up. She does certainly have a great deal of influence over other Democrats that she hasn't used to effectuate the resistance that she's been so willing to claim in rhetoric.
Shahid, tell me how you feel you would be best suited to represent California's 12th congressional district. You mentioned earlier it is the most liberal district in the country. So what are your qualifications to somebody who's, you know, willing to see Nancy Pelosi be stripped of her title?
Thanks for asking. You know, I've been an issue advocate promoting the constitutional rights of all Americans for decades. You know, resistance is more than just a hashtag for me. It's something to which I'm thoroughly committed, and it's something that I've demonstrated. I've been fighting not just on the outside, but also on the inside, even without a seat in Congress, my entire career. I was one of the first advocates to file a legal challenge seeking marriage equality for same-sex couples. I've done a lot of work challenging mass surveillance by the NSA, as well as targeted surveillance by the FBI, which has historically been very politicized and undermined the civil rights of particular communities, from people who've resisted civil rights abuses to people who've sought to change U.S. foreign policy and address wars that we've initiated abroad. I've beyond those issues, I've also, in my art as a musician, raised socially conscious themes from, you know, one of my first songs that I recorded was the Baghdad Blues, about the plights of military families whose breadwinners are called to serve in armed service. I have a funk tune about climate change and militarism. And as an organizer, beyond my advocacy and beyond my art, I've been helping build grassroots coalitions to champion constitutional rights across the country for a decade. And I'm very thoroughly committed to precisely the principles that the incumbent, unfortunately, is undermining in practice.
So you have lived in the Bay Area for many years. You, I understand, went to Stanford Law School. How does, you would imagine that your politics would resonate very well with the constituencies that live there. And yet, you know, even in very liberal parts of the country, we see establishment Democrats become, you know, be able to take power. Often they get the finances from their, you know, corporate campaign donors. So it ends up becoming about money. And then the person that we send to Washington, D.C. just doesn't capture enough of the vision that the constituents represent. So how are you going to overcome that challenge? Because unfortunately, it comes down to money time and again.
It doesn't entirely come down to money. And you're certainly right to note that I'm vastly outgunned at the outset. And Nancy Pelosi is the most renowned corporate fundraiser in the House. And I'm a working class public interest advocate. That notwithstanding, two other resources that matter in political campaigns are ideas and volunteers. And we will easily beat the incumbent with respect to ideas. You know, it's not just the constitutional rights of Americans or immigrants or corporate corruption that we're challenging. It's also the prison industrial slavery complex. And Americans are done with corporate co-optation of our democracy. With respect to volunteers, I suspect that we will mobilize a substantial swath of our congressional district. And as for the money, I think there is a substantial chunk of, for instance, the tech community, of, for instance, Muslims, peace and justice activists. San Francisco is a very mobilized city. And across the different segments of our community, people share my concerns. And I certainly am quite confident that the strongest corporate fundraiser in the House will outpace us with respect to her fundraising. As long as we can raise enough funds to get our message out, I'm very confident that we'll be competitive. San Franciscans are the last people in the country who want to continue the failed and racist war on drugs. We're the last people in the country who would be willing, for instance, to call a government whistleblower who resigned his career to point out the co-optation of the internet as a surveillance platform, a traitor, as Nancy Pelosi has done. We're the last people in the country who want to see Washington continue to run roughshod over the rights of us and other Americans. And I'm very hopeful that, provided an alternative, the people of my community will agree with me that together we can do better.
Shahid, how do you view your candidacy within the national framework of people mounting challenges to establishment lawmakers, whether those establishment lawmakers are Republican or Democrat, whether the challengers are, like yourself, progressive or not? There seems to be this, the polarization in our country politically seems to really have created an increased energizing among the electorate, which can only be a good thing, right? Because for far too long, those who've been in power and just easily sailed to re-election have relied on the non-participation of a majority of Americans. More Americans don't vote than vote.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I think that ultimately, our campaign is as much to dislodge and hopefully remove a corporate pillar of the establishment as it is to win real representation for San Francisco. I certainly hope to see San Francisco's voice in the House be a more full-throated progressive voice. At the same time, just to be clear here, Nancy Pelosi has been so in bed with the corporate power structure of Washington that I'm actually running both to her left and her right at the same time.
How so?
You know, well, so for instance, a vote to restrain executive power in order to prevent the NSA from monitoring the communications and browsing history of everyone in the world, that's not a particularly progressive position. That's actually a conservative position. It conserves the Fourth Amendment rights to which our country has long been committed. Similar, you know, restraints on executive power.
Your definition of conservative so then harkens to the original definition rather than what is passing for conservatism as per Republicans today.
Right. And both conservative and liberal as descriptors have been thoroughly shorn from their roots, right? Liberals are people who are supposed to promote liberty. And conservatives are people who are supposed to conserve a social structure. The conservatives in our country are quite radical now. And the liberals in our country are quite co-opted now. Progressives are people who seek a brighter day, and I plan to do that too. But at the same time, I'm also just trying to hold the line on basic constitutional rights that all of Washington seems entirely too willing to compromise. The right wing has said for a long time in the context of jurisprudence that expands the rights of Americans that if liberals want to see policy changes, they should amend the Constitution. No one's passed a constitutional amendment to say that Americans should no longer have a right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. No one's passed a constitutional amendment to say that we shouldn't have a right to assembly or a right to speech. But what does the right to assembly look like after the Occupy movement, which was just denied it? What does the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures look like when the NSA is monitoring everything you do online or all of your phone calls? No one's passed amendments to end the rights that have long made our country a beacon of freedom to the rest of the world. But in practice, both liberals and conservatives have abandoned their respective commitments to champion what are ultimately authoritarian policies. And my candidacy is as much about defending democracy as it is about promoting constitutional rights or challenging corporate corruption.
Now, Shahid, though, Donald Trump has been evoked as the, you know, incredibly demonic figure against which, you know, first Hillary Clinton tried to win an election and failed. And now the Democrats seem to be using that same playbook, which is vote for us because we're not Donald Trump. Vote for us because, you know, it's better to have us, better the devil, you know, they might as well come out and say, of course, they don't say that, than Trump's continued power and his Republican Party, which enables him so much, their continued power. And you might come across those people who challenge your candidacy saying, I support you, I agree with you, but I just can't risk Nancy Pelosi not being there to, you know, hold off a Republican challenger. Just can't risk you getting to the general election and losing to a Republican. How do you respond to that?
Well, let's just be clear. As long as Nancy Pelosi is the leader of the Democrats, the resistance will be shackled. She talks about resistance, but as we've discussed, she doesn't effectuate it in practice. And similarly, if Democrats take the House and someone else is the Speaker, that will be to the benefit of the country and the party. So if people are concerned about Trump, as they should be, because he is a maniacal kleptocrat and serial rapist and longtime committer of fraud, if you're serious about being concerned about Trump, that's exactly why we shouldn't send a pillar of the corporate establishment back to Washington. We can do better than that. You know, resistance for me is not just a talking point. It's not a hashtag. It's something to which I've been committed across multiple struggles in multiple theaters for a long time and with a seat in Congress, particularly an opportunity to do in oversight hearings what members of Congress have been so unwilling to do. I think I could do a great deal to empower resistance in Washington and meaningfully check and balance this president. I should make clear here, you know, it's worth noting, I've asked questions about corruption and the rule of law that no member of Congress has ever asked in Senate hearing chambers, and I've been arrested for it. At the end of the day, resistance is exactly why San Franciscans should send me to Washington, because it is under this maniacal criminal president in particular that we must have full-throated constitutional progressivism being championed, especially on behalf of our country's most progressive city in the nation's capital.
Shahid, let me ask you a couple more questions. Your positions on economic justice, we seem to be going back to this Red Scare style, fear-mongering, where as people are disaffected with the state of our economy, more and more people even turning to socialism, you see those on the right, using some of the same language every time people, you know, question the tax break for corporations. So what is your position on economic justice? And then also, because we've had so much in the news lately about gun violence, and you said you're constitutionalist, the Second Amendment issue is a big one. If you can share your platform positions on those two issues, that would be great.
Sure. Great question. Thank you for asking. Economic rights are one of the principal ways in which the corporate corruption of our democracy is most apparent. And among the among the planks in my platform is a goal to particularly save federal social services by shrinking the military budget. And this becomes especially pressing in the wake of the GOP tax scam.
Shrinking the military budget is a very, very unpopular position in Washington, D.C.
It is. Stay with me. But it's a very popular position in the United States. Mm. This is exactly my point, that in Washington, our elected representatives are all too willing to promote interests that the country does not support. The drug war is one example. Mass surveillance is another. Siphoning money from people's paychecks to then funnel into high-tech weapons systems to fight who exactly is another example. And I want to dig into particularly two examples of runaway military spending that we could usefully reduce and how I would rebalance those funding priorities. So first, we have U.S. military bases in over 150 countries around the world. And they're coordinated by a department that claims to be the Department of Defense. If it's the Department of Defense that Congress is spending, we shouldn't have military bases in 150 countries. We can save hundreds of billions of dollars every year by closing foreign U.S. military bases. And that would actually enhance our foreign policy power, because it's not military strength that has historically represented the base of the United States power in the world. It is our smart power. It is the commitment of people in other countries to the values that we demonstrate our commitments to. And when we demonstrate our commitment to issues like internationalism, to human rights, in the current context, to remedies to address the climate crisis, those are the kinds of positions that will enhance our standing in the world such that we don't need to spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year occupying foreign countries or with an occupying U.S. presence in those countries. In many of those countries, our presence is not particularly popular. Okinawa, Japan comes to mind as an example, where U.S. military service members have unfortunately been complicit and in some cases convicted of serious offenses against civilians. Another example is the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, which has been described as an object of procurement malpractice. This plane, which does not have an enemy, let's be clear here, the three primary threats to U.S. national security are election hacking, climate change, and our president. And we are in the process of wasting $1.5 trillion on a high-tech weapon system that has no enemy to fight. The plane does not fly, it is fraudulent, and it is a failure. And we can rechannel those funds, again, which are not actually defending national security, but instead just enriching a corporate weapons manufacturer. We can rechannel those funds to student debt relief, to Medicare for all, for early childhood education and development, and for affordable housing to address the urban housing crisis around our country. That, I think, is one of the sharpest points of differentiation between me, the incumbent, and the corporate establishment in Washington that she represents. I would like to see U.S. taxpayer dollars go towards funding social services that working people need, not towards funding a global military empire.
And then any position specifically on the gun violence that we're seeing?
you know, it's been amazing to me, inspiring to see the young people responding to the issues that are quite literally killing their classmates.
Yeah.
And we should be clear here that the Second Amendment does not protect an unfettered right to bear arms for whatever purposes one might wish. Until the Supreme Court's decision in 2008 and the Heller decision, the right to bear arms was particularly contingent on the rest of the clause in the Second Amendment, which is to say militias, not individuals. There was no individual right to bear arms until 2008 under the United States jurisprudence. And I want to be clear here, people who are committed to the Second Amendment should worry a lot less about gun control, because we have lots of laws that burden in some ways all kinds of constitutional rights. For instance, you know, it's the First Amendment is burdened routinely. Our jurisprudence has accepted time, place, or manner restrictions on the ways and places and methods through which one might, for instance, use one's voice. Similarly, restrictions on gun rights don't necessarily compromise the Second Amendment, but I'll tell you what does. And most conservatives, or people who claim to be conservatives, haven't gripped this. The greatest threat to the Second Amendment in the United States today is the militarization of local police, because the Second Amendment is supposed to be a constitutional escape hatch. It's not just a right to bear arms. Its purpose in the context of the original passage of the Constitution was to ensure a right of resistance, particularly to a potentially runaway federal government. But what makes a right to resistance meaningless in the contemporary context? You can have all the arms you want, but it doesn't translate into a right of resistance, particularly because police have become militarized. Police militarization is the threat to the Second Amendment that the NRA never looks at, doesn't even talk about. And to connect the NRA to the Second Amendment is kind of like claiming that Nancy Pelosi is a liberal or a progressive. It requires ignoring the facts and latching only onto the appearance. And if you look very closely at the reality beyond the rhetoric, I think it's quite clear that the young people in this country are thoughtfully and I think credibly calling out the supposed adults in the room for lack of a better set of words, just failing to do our jobs.
Shahid, where can people find out more about the work that you do, your candidacy, and if they want to support your congressional bid to oust Nancy Pelosi?
We'd invite anybody to check us out online at shahidforchange.us. And I look forward to working with the people of my district and volunteers in other places who might care about our issues to win some real representation for San Francisco and Washington.
We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Shahid Buttar is a candidate in the primary election for California's 12th congressional district, currently on leave as director of grassroots advocacy at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. We've been discussing his challenge to Nancy Pelosi. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.